something to remember too. A lot of people have been who have come back from Vietnam after having served when they were 19, and never the same. So let us hold them in our hearts too for Memorial Day weekend. And for everybody everywhere, there's going to be something to do on Monday. Parades, maybe just a moment of silence, a nearby military cemetery, just even bowing your heads. Just a little bit of recognition for that service is appropriate. Coming up tomorrow night, it'll be a time for Patriots with Dale Brown. Battlefield America is the subject tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. Open Lines is our subject tonight, or better said, whatever you're going to choose for the subject. I thought I'd just pass along one quick thing here. We're finding out more and more from the flight recorder data about this French jet, this AF Air France 447 that went down on its way from Rio de Janeiro to Paris. And now we know more about how the second pilot tried to rouse the captain shortly after the plane had begun a fateful descent. There was a tropical storm. They tried to steer around it. Autopilot got kicked off. And the two lesser experienced pilots on the flight deck were doing what they could. They went to go wake up the captain. The captain never took controls again. He gave advice. He stood there. He thought his crew would be able to recover from it. They didn't. Apparently, they made a couple of tragic errors, which investigators are still trying to sort out. David Robert, 37, the second pilot, had begun anxiously calling for their more experienced captain after the autopilot suddenly cut off 4 hours after takeoff. It's not unusual for the senior captain to, you know, get a snooze in. No one is quite sure why he didn't take control of the plane again, thinking perhaps that things were better than they were. Now the story is that the plane dropped 10,000 feet a minute, and they're calling it 3.5 minutes of sheer terror for everybody on that flight. There was nothing they could do. They were going nose up at a time when they should have been going nose down to get more speed. For whatever reason, we still don't know everything about it, but it must be very hard for the families of the victims of the plane to know those last minutes were just unbearable to imagine for us all. But at least we know more because of the flight data recorder, and thank God we have these black boxes everywhere to at least begin to sort out what happens. We're sorting out what's going on in the news and other stories. We'll get back to Open Lines coming up next. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Ponick. Coming to you from the studios of News Radio 610 WIOD in Miami tonight, David is in Eureka, California, on Coast to Coast, Open Lines. David?
Howdy, Ian. I'd like to talk about your college thing you got going on.
Sure.
The guest last hour was talking about how they were getting people like in the debt with the college loans and stuff, that the banks helped the government write the loan papers and stuff so that they'd always be in debt. They couldn't write it off. Well, I'd like to take it one step further. The government has actually tried a few months ago to force millions into the colleges with a piece of legislation called the DREAM Act. And one of the things that illegal aliens would have to do was attend a college, a two-year college, or serve in the military. So they were going to force all these people into schools. And it just so happens my senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, her husband, Richard Blum, owns a million or so shares of a school called ITT Technical Institute, which these people would have possibly had to go to qualify for the DREAM Act. So that's how far up it goes. Not only are they going to get you on the hook for the loans for a lifetime, but they're going to force you to go to school if you're an illegal alien. So that's what they're up to. It's really weird.
But that's interesting, you know, and I guess we look at the trade-offs of that and we think, well, we want people to have a marketable skill. We want people to be able to kick back, tax money to the economy, not just take it out. You know, I could see where there's the upside to that, but and not knowing anything about the details of this arrangement that you're talking about, just taking on face value that you're right, there is this conflict of interest that's floating around a lot. At least a 2-year degree, if that qualified you, at least that's not as expensive usually. Although, as we've already heard, we've talked to somebody who had a $35,000 debt just after, a vocational education. And that is just, it seems unjustifiable how high that is. Thank you, David. We'll go to Jerry in St. Louis, Wildcard Line on Coast to Coast. Where you want to take us, Jerry?
Hey, I got two things I want to tell you. When I was going to school in the 80s, what happened, because we were programmed that is capitalist, now it's called socialism. So what happened to that, from capitalism to socialism? And number two,
I don't understand you. I don't think I understand that first point. What do you mean by that?
Capitalism. You remember when you were going to school back in the 70s and the 80s? You were told that you were told we were capitalism. Capitalism. Now it's called socialism.
Who's calling it socialism?
Well, the news and everything like that.
We haven't changed our economy. We're still capitalistic.
Okay. Well, number two, I've been driving a truck.
Well, who's telling you you now live? Who's telling you that we now have a socialist economy?
You hear it on the news all the time. They talk about the socialized, socialism and all that going on in the United States and all that.
Okay. We may be listening to different news sources, but go ahead.
Yeah. Number two, I've been driving a truck for 20 years, okay?
Yeah.
Well, a dispatcher used to be, somebody that, can't drive a truck no more and stuff like that. The company now I've been working for the last 10 years, they got to have a college degree to become a dispatcher now. You got to have a bachelor's degree and bachelor's degree in business before you can become a dispatcher now. What happened to the change?
Right, right. Well, and I would at least understand if it was like a bachelor's degree in logistics.
No,
right? I would almost understand that, but just a business degree to be a dispatcher?
Yeah, just to be a dispatcher. And half of these kids, young kids, are going into dispatching are 20 years old. They don't know nothing about the trucking industry. They don't know nothing, nothing whatsoever. And they're sitting there trying to tell you how to do this and do that. It's like, come on, guys. Have you ever driven a truck before? You know what it's like out here in the real world? They don't. And that's the problem.
They ought to make all the dispatchers have driven a truck. They ought to make all of the dispatchers that have their trucker's license, don't you think?
Yeah. But
that would help a lot more.
Yeah, that would help out a whole lot. Because when I was good, like I said, when I first started in the business, a lot of these guys were retired truckers or they were drivers that lost their medical cards and all that.
So, I get that. That makes more. That certainly makes a lot more sense to me. And thank you, Jerry. That's interesting. I wonder if that's industry-wide or just for the company you're working for. Jim is in Lancaster, California, on a Wildcard Line on Coast to Coast. Jim?
Good day and evening to you there, Mr. Pundit. Oh, I'm sorry, Ian. How's it going?
I'm great, thank you.
Hey, you know something? I used to like living in the land of sheep, but now we're surrounded by lemmings, and if people don't know what lemmings are, they're little rodents that live in large colonies, and when one jumps off a cliff, inexplicably, they all jump off the cliff and die. It's a biological fact, and we're surrounded by lemmings here. Everybody is acting like wimps. We're Americans.
Who are you talking about?
Oh, the people. What was that, social engineering? Good Lord. I mean, don't get me wrong, but hey, if you believe in God, which a lot of people do, a lot of people don't, we have this thing called free will. Open your eyes, take a look around. You are in control. We have this thing called the vote. You don't like what's going on with the government? Right. Vote.
Right. Hey, by the way, have you seen the movie The Adjustment Bureau by any chance?
No, I haven't. I'm not much of a movie goer, really.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting, it's Matt Damon, but it's a whole, basically the whole movie is a discussion about free will. That was good. I really liked that. The best part about the movie was the discussion about what is and what isn't free will.
Well, believe it or not, I will probably catch that movie in about 3 years because I'm like 3 years behind in the movies. But really, to tell you the truth of the matter, we're all thinking creatures, in case anybody hasn't figured it out. United we stand, divided we fall. We've been divided ever since we put our ethnic title before the word American. And I've been saying this for about 15 years now.
See, you know? I'll disagree with you this much. I grew up in Chicago, and that was everywhere. Yeah. Irish American.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everybody was Italian American, Greek American. Everybody,
but
we had the Greek American.
World, and nobody, especially those who are our enemies now, you know, the ones that want to kill us, they don't look upon us as African-American, Caucasian-American. They just look at us as American.
Oh, I agree.
And so we got to get past that simplicity. But really, to tell you the truth of the matter, hey, this college thing, look, I got ganked for $1,500 by probably the greatest scam I'd ever seen. I'd seen really good ones, telemarketing, back in the mid-'80s, but this one was great. And it cost me $1,500, okay? So, hey. Guaranteed student loan, sure, and I'm still on the hook for it, but really, I'm getting past it. I'm moving on.
Right.
College degree, you want to throw one at me? You want to send me to college, throw it at me? Be my guest. I mean, do I sound like a unreasonable, semi-intelligent Cro-Magnon man who just drags his knuckles and tries to make fire with flint?
No.
Okay.
No, I say you're not you don't sound like a knuckle dragger.
But I like to portray myself as one. You know, hey, never judge a book by its cover. Now, also, as far as like, you know, let's see, I can go on and on and on. But
I bet you could.
I tell you what, though, really, the fact of the matter is that we all have one gift. And as soon as we figure out how to really look at this gift, and I call it being plugged in. You know, you guys like to use the word psychic, this, that. I call it being plugged in. We all have the plugs. There is the information out there to be given to us. Some know how to plug in at will. Some do it against their will. And some people have no clue.
Okay.
Me, I like to think of myself as somebody who, at will, sometimes not at will, but I understand it. I know my place in the universe. Most of all, hey, you know, all I got to do is just open up my eyes and look around. And I can actually have some control over my small world. Now, we all pull together and get our heads thinking correctly before it becomes too late. And I tell you what, too late is when we end up in a war with a certain communist nation that's running on a capitalistic economy right now. You know what I'm saying? And, boy, we are really going to be in trouble. So I got to say China just to make it, you know, make it clear and evident to everybody.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I thank you and have a good night. I know that part of that is a subject actually for tomorrow night, A Time for Patriots. Dale Brown makes a similar but slightly different argument about our immediate future in novel form. But first, Ray is in Citrus Springs, Florida. How far away are you from me, Ray?
Just about a half hour or so south of Ocala.
All right, very good. And so it's open lines. Where do you want to take us?
I heard a story today, Ian, and it kind of tugged at my heart. It's a little dog named Mason. It was down in Alabama. And it supposedly he was in a shed when the tornado hit and it took the shed. They said they looked for him for days and days and they just figured that he was gone. And 2 weeks, they come home one day. Mason was on the porch. Hmm. He had two broke legs. So evidently he drug himself for I don't know how many miles, but it just kind of hit me.
Oh, yeah.
The vet fixed him up. So just a little story.
There've been a couple of those with dogs that have been reunited. I hadn't heard about. So the dog was in the shed when the shed was taken away.
Right.
Wow. That would have been.
Yeah,
terrifying.
It was on ABC News. I heard it earlier today.
Thank you for that.
It was a good story. I liked it.
I like the story too, and you can Google this. And thanks, Ray. About the dog in China that's nursing two liger cubs, you know, lion tiger mixed cubs, and the natural mother was starving the cubs for whatever reason, and they found the surrogate dog mother, and it was pretty adorable. If you get a chance, go Google that. It's worth the video. Clint is in Anchorage, west of the Rockies, on coast to coast. Clint.
Hi, Ian, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, open lines, go ahead.
Okay, I was wanting to say that life will survive 2012 in some way.
I think it will, too. What do you think will happen in December of 2012?
I don't think anything will happen. I think we'll all still be here the next day.
I think we will be, too. I'm assuming you didn't sell all your worldly goods before last week's supposed apocalypse?
Oh, no.
No. Was there a lot of that?
Moved into a new home.
On that day. That's optimism right there. That says it right there. You're committed to a new mortgage.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Clint. Well, I have every reason to think that we'll all be here, but I know Coast to Coast will be there one way or another come 2012. Arnold in Rancho Cordova, California, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast. Arnold?
Yes, Ian. Thank you for taking my call.
Glad to have you.
All right. I was related to your subject about school loans. Back around 1990-92, I was going to a law school, private law school, part-time while working full-time, part-time, and I eventually dropped out because it was just too much for me. And later on, I did have a bankruptcy, and I was told basically by the lawyers, you know, one of the main reasons why you can't really cover your school loans in a bankruptcy is you never know when you're going to take advantage of your education, even if you didn't get the full degree. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I understand that, but I also, you know, appreciated how in the prior hour they were talking about at least, you know, there's got to be ways to make it so that people get out with a lot less burden on their backs. Because I may be paying these loans back until the day I die.
Yeah. No, there's lots of people that do. And so you never got your law degree?
No. After trying to manage for 2 years part time and working, and actually I did find out sometime afterward that it does turn out that a much higher percentage of part time students drop out, but they don't tell you that.
They don't tell you that going in, nor are they telling. Maybe they are just now telling prospective law students that just aren't the jobs out there too. There's a lot of graduating lawyers with a lot of debt, and there just really aren't enough jobs for lawyers out there to be had. You know, actually the same thing's true with teachers. They were running a series of ads, public service announcements, encouraging people to go back to school and get their teaching certificates to fill in for this teacher glut that's coming up. Well, I talked to a bunch of people who have been out of school for 6 or 7 years with a teaching certificate, and they're saying, what glut? There's no huge, you know, there's no giant list of openings in any school district they know of, except for some rural school districts. But, I mean, those should be filled. But is it true that there are jobs out there for all these people who are making that extra effort? Time will tell on that one. And Ryan in Chicago, east of the Rockies, you'll be first up when we get back to you coming up in just a moment. We've been clearing out lines to give you a chance to grab one on the way. It's open lines, and it's just like we like to do it on Friday nights. Memorial Day weekend. Hope you're going to make the most of it. George Norrie's got the night off. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast. Hey, Memorial Day weekend. Let's also remember the victims of 9/11 who fought so valiantly against the terrorists. The ones that did everything they could to try to fight back. Remember them. Let's roll that great Neil Young tune. We'll get to more open line calls coming up. I'll throw a hi out to parents of a friend of mine. So the Penchanskys, wherever you are, if you're up listening tonight, as so often your insomnia gets to you, I say hi. And what about you? If you can stick around, we've got more open lines both tonight and maybe even the first hour tomorrow night when our guest will be novelist Dale Brown, A Time for Patriots. The subject is Battlefield America tomorrow night, Memorial Day weekend on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, thanks for your patience, Ryan in Chicago. I'm assuming listening to the Big 89 WLS. Ryan?
Yes, I am listening to WLS, and your former home where it was high 30s yesterday says hello.
You know what? Because I'm in Miami. I talked to my wife yesterday when I left, and there was a frost warning where, and in the Twin Cities when I pulled out, and I moved flying to 85 and sunny. It wasn't a bad turnaround for 3 hours effort. I don't mind telling you. So, yeah, a pretty cold spring. So it's open lines. Where do you want to take us, Ryan?
Well, I'm going to cover this college topic, and I think I sort of have a kind of unique breadth of experience
coming from these different perspectives of people saying, you know, college isn't for everyone. For about 6 years from the last year of high school, I worked in skilled labor in a union. And during that time, I got my associates, and I also finished off my bachelor's at DePaul there in Chicago.
Right.
And now I am 2 years into MFA at a Southern university. I'm not going to name it. Right. And I kind of have 2 points I'd like to get to. The first one, although I'd like to toe the company line per se in academia, and like the idealist in me says that I think everybody could benefit. I think the population could benefit where everybody would have at least 2 years of maybe general education courses. Even the truck driver in St. Louis, I think a better educated public, I mean, it would be wonderful. But then the realist in me, who is, you know, I've had a TA position for the last 2 years, you know, I'm seeing the student bodies where, you know, people are saying the middle class is being lost or destroyed. I'm sort of seeing the middle class of intelligence sort of go wayward. It's either my students are smart and they're really smart and they know what they're doing, or they're just, it's almost, I don't want to say a lost cause, but there's only so much you can do when you get to this point, you know, first or second year of college, you know, to really mold or change the students.
Now, to what do you attribute that?
I'm not sure. I can't, you know, I can't really say. Last time I called in was when your guest Mark Barlin was on, the Dumbest Generation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, maybe it's a loss of critical thought, you know.
Weren't we talking that night about grade inflation, too, to a point where it was, where that was a part of it, where people were getting told that they were smarter than they were?
Talking about that. And I also brought up the point where I feel like that critical thinking was sort of going away because, you know, with the rise of being able just to look up anything on Google or Wikipedia, you know, instead of, you know, going through that book and parsing out, like reading Descartes and learning the process of how he comes to these conclusions, you're just coming to the conclusions without, you know, following the path towards those conclusions.
Right.
So that might be one of the reasons.
That's valid. Just real quickly, so you're a TA, and so what kind of classes are you teaching?
I'm getting my MFA in creative writing, and I'm teaching my first year I taught, you know, intro to English sort of, you know, first year classes. And my second year, this past year, I was teaching, you know, that second year English course, and I was actually able to teach one poetry workshop because that's what my MFA is in. Pardon me?
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I was curious to see about, so the students you see, their writing skills are remedial? Are they acceptable? Are they exemplary?
That's the thing. Like in these intro to English classes, I'm seeing students either, you know, there's either can construct a paragraph, they can construct an essay. And it's not like I can teach them some things and they're understanding it, they're getting it. And there's just some students where I'm just concerned. It's like, I'm not sure how you got into this class, and I'm not sure how much there is I can actually do, because some students are just, I'm trying to explain to them how to construct a paragraph.
Right.
And this is, you know, this is university. I mean, this isn't like, you know, this is a pretty big, well-known university that I'm at.
You would think by the time they got through high school, they could do a thesis, an antithesis, a couple of basic supports, and a conclusion.
Yeah, and even when I give out the writing assignments, I mean, they're pretty simple. I mean, it's five paragraph essay here where, you know, and I want to know, I didn't hear what the guest was talking about fully. Did he mention anything about the graduate program sort of being a real, real moneymaker for the universities?
No, we didn't really get into that. We were talking about mostly from the student loan aspect of it. And so that was really more of an undergrad as opposed to, because, you know, in my experience anyway, a lot of the graduate programs are much more affordable than the undergrad programs.
See, that's the thing. They are very affordable. But in the humanities, you know, philosophy, English, history, you're seeing it's, see, the problem it stems from that for the last 20 years or so, universities across the board, from the best to the smallest, to, you know, Eastern Illinois University to University of Chicago, as tenure professors are leaving, they have this massive crop of, you know, newly graduating, I'll just say people got their MFAs, newly graduating, you know, students who get their MFAs,
right,
to replace them with, and they're not offering them tenure track positions. They're just making them adjuncts, right, where they can pay them pennies on the dollars. They still have the same degree, and there's no real contract. You get maybe 1 year guaranteed.
Right.
So you're basically seeing this sort of free labor force of these graduate students with their TA ships. And yes, they don't have to pay for the tuition, but their stipend, it's really, we don't have a lot to live off of with the stipend. And we're sort of told, yes, you know, go to this academic life. It's a life worth living and pursuit of knowledge and stuff like that. But, you know, for those who don't get the TA ships or, you know,
right,
don't get the stipends, they have to take out loans, because I lost my TA ship in my last semester I was just in. I had to come back because I was looking at taking out a loan, and it was ridiculous.
Right. And well, we'll probably have to leave that there, but I know that, you know, you also look at the other side of that, and thank you, Ryan, appreciate that. You hear, like, remember that story about the professor from Northwestern that was offering, was doing essentially a class where he was showing a woman being brought to climax in front of a class, and he was, you know, arguing that it had this, you know, value for people to watch it. And so they just, it was a sex class where people were watching people have sex. And it was such a tortured justification. It came right down to his fact the guy was tenured, you know, and you could do goofy stuff like that when you're tenured. And you get people who are adjunct, which is really the backbone of every college. They don't have that kind of guarantee. They serve at the pleasure of the school, and they do all of the heavy lifting. Let's do to Mike in Coldwater, Mississippi. Open lines on Coast to Coast on any topic you want. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Ian. How are you this morning?
Good. Thanks for hanging on.
No problem. I wanted to talk about college. I did some research last year and came across University of People. It's a completely online college. It's not accredited in the United States as of yet. But it's a United Nations backed college, and the fees were like $40 a class.
How about that?
You were able to download material. There were forums that you had to go to and spend time. You know, they logged your time in, but you were in forums where you were discussing the topic, and they offered degrees in business, and I can't remember what else, but they offered a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts. And they were working on getting accreditation in the United States. And I think if you look it up, it's a very interesting thing. The professors,
right,
a lot of them donate time to it. They're all businessmen, they're professors, people that are knowledgeable, and they're from all different cultures. So
you know,
they have a much better education.
If you do the work, you do the reading, you write the papers, you get the knowledge, that's the point of college. You know, I mean, it's to get smarter. And if you can get smarter that way, cheaper, great. If you can get a successful career in the College of Hard Knocks, that's cool too. But yeah, I think there should be those kind of options. Very interesting, Mike. I'll keep an eye on that. Thanks for the heads up. William is in San Dimas, California. Open lines on Coast to Coast. William?
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing, Ian? It's great to talk to you. I was calling to talk about the possibility of a new generation of chemtrails.
Oh, interesting. Why?
Yeah, because I do security in Whittier, and I've been watching the chemtrail conspiracy, you know, formulate, and I've been watching them do their patterns right over me all day, and predominantly in the evening. And I've noticed that since right before all these tornadoes started going off, and another caller brought this up too, that right before then, all the chemtrails really ceased. And you rarely would see contrails before that. And now you just see the contrails from the planes that fly the same exact pattern, except today I was watching it, and the contrail is supposed to follow the plane like 10 to 20 lengths of a plane right behind it, right? And so these new chemtrail, well, this is pure speculation, but my idea is these new chemtrails are, because it's so popular that people are coming to knowledge that these chemtrails exist, that they had to possibly change the components of them to make them so they're less visible. And so you could see if you watch the contrail, sometimes they'll break and then they'll close in on themselves. Like if you were to hold your hands out parallel to each other, they would just go inward on each other, instead of closing in from, you know, say the plane is going from left to right, and instead of the contrail going from left to right, it would go, it close in on itself. So it's kind of weird that
you mentioned this in context with the tornadoes. Did I understand you right when you were making that connection? How do the two relate to each other in your mind?
Well, honestly, I think that the weather alteration, I think that has to do with something, and I think it possibly, maybe, you know, I can't say for sure that they're you know, causing all of these catastrophes, you know, but it just I found it really odd, because I watch out for these all day, you know, I sit there and I watch the sky, and I just found it really odd that before all of these tornadoes, you would just see so many chemtrails in the sky, and it would just make me sick every single day. And now I haven't, you would rarely see a contrail. Now it's like you see these contrails that were a rarity in the same flight patterns, they're similar to contrails, except they don't follow the exact characteristics of a contrail, you know? You understand what I'm saying?
I'll be honest with you and say I hang out with a lot of pilots, so they maintain there is no such thing as chemtrails. So
and my uncle believes when the same thing. He's a pilot for American Airlines.
Yeah, you know, but I'd say when you say the characteristics are different, I couldn't tell you the difference between – I've been around people who point out to me and go, oh, look, there's a chemtrail, and it looks to me like a contrail, but I understand at least, you know, you are going with the idea of chemtrails as weather modifiers.
Right.
And that was the supposedly the original idea behind them in the first place.
They have that HR, the House of Representatives bill, the 2977, I believe. And it specifically says that chemtrails are labeled as an exotic weapon. So it's like the, you know, my uncle, he doesn't even believe they exist. You know, he's a pilot for American Airlines, you know, and he just believes, like, I'm just a conspiracy nut when it comes down to it. But, you know, for the fact that they acknowledge that they exist, but, you know, I just find it really bizarre, you know.
Well, I don't know that Congress has acknowledged that they exist. So I got to be honest with you, but I'll look that one up. Anyway, yeah. I hadn't heard that. What was the number you said? What was the bill?
HR, I believe it's HR 2977.
2977. Is that currently in front of Congress?
It's already passed. I forget. It's something about the. It has the name like something Space Act, but it has. It's under the. It has all of the. What they call exotic weapons and tectonic weapons are in the same classification as the exotic weapons. And I just find it, you know, kind of bizarre.
And, all right. Well, I'll take a look for that. And I thank you, William. Jim is in Olivehurst, California. Let me see what I can get to before the top of the hour. Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Hey, where do you want to take us?
Well, I want to take you back to the plane.
Okay, go ahead. I mean, when the jet that went down from Air France?
That's correct. Please. We have parachutes for all these planes, even commercial airlines now. Even Cessna's putting them on their trainers at this time. And we have this technology. There's no sense for people to be dying like that.
Well, it is a giant plane. So, I mean, the bigger the plane, the bigger the parachute has to be. And so when you get into a smaller jet, and yes, there's several of these that are now being equipped with parachutes.
No, they have them for commercial airlines.
Well, I'm saying when you get a really big jet, you have to have a really big parachute. And I don't know even there it would have worked in a tropical storm. So maybe under the right, under like if all things being equal, if there was no wind, you could just drop it and you would be able to float. But I don't know what would even happen if the plane is in the midst of a tropical storm. I guess I don't know enough about parachuting to know whether you could do that without fear of the opening of the parachute being closed from the wind. You know what I mean?
Right, but I think they'd stand a whole lot better chance with that than without it, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe that's where we're coming down to, is that they will be able to have that for everybody. I'd love to think that. I mean, it's really sad. I mean, we were talking about this, and thank you so much for jumping in. You know, I was reading this story, and I it was really hard to read this part from the mom who talked about what a nightmare this is. She was a French mother, and she said that she's living in a nightmare. She said that that this is a horror story that the family is in the middle of, this discussion about the 3.5 minutes of terror as the Air France jet dropped 10,000 feet a minute for 3.5 minutes before it hit the water. And her exact quote is something I think we could all relate to. "We are in a horror movie," she said. "We would have preferred not to talk about it, that we could have left them in peace, that we could be left with an image different from reality, from what we will be told from the analysis. Bring back the bodies, identify them or not. Either way, we are left traumatized." Gosh. Well, still better to know what happened so that we can try to avoid those crashes in the future, and planes will get safer and safer. Maybe parachutes for giant jets too someday. We'll get back to open lines coming up. We'll pick up Ivan in the Bronx, and wherever you are too, we'll get you an open line here between now and the end of the show. And I look forward to tomorrow night, Dale Brown, A Time for Patriots. And if you've been reading about this new book about Roswell and Area 51 and these other secrets that are out, well, we'll get that Sunday night for you on Coast to Coast.